Hey there, friend. Welcome to another episode of Job with Julie. I'm Julie Slattery, and I will remind you that this podcast is an outreach of a ministry called Authentic Intimacy. We are a ministry that is dedicated to helping people make sense of God in their sexuality. Well, on this podcast, I sometimes interview experts who can give us guidance and healing, but other times I ask people just to share their stories. You know, stories really give us hope that healing is possible for us too. My guest today is Anne Lin, and she has one of those very powerful stories. Anne was born in Vietnam. She immigrated to the United States when she was 4, and unfortunately, she experienced a very volatile and abusive home environment. It's no wonder that the concept of a forever home, which is the title of Anne's new book, is so key to her. Now, on her stumbling journey of healing, Anne has discovered how to unlearn defense mechanisms and toxic cycles that she was raised in growing up, and now is walking every day with her forever home in mind. So I think you're going to be encouraged and inspired by her story. So grab your coffee and join in my conversation with Anne Lin. Hey, Anne, welcome to Job with Julie. You are, I hope I use this term correctly, you are a social media influencer. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Okay.
We hear about you people, you know, like from our generation, we hear about these social media influencers, and you are one. So tell us a little bit about what that means and how you found yourself in that position.
Well, I never set out to be a social media influencer, especially because the vocation didn't exist when I was younger either. So it wasn't something to aspire to. However, I did find myself in the lucky position of gaining an audience once I moved out of my mother's house and kind of had to scrap together a livable space for myself. I snapped a photo of it, put it on my Instagram at the time, and it blew up. And that was the beginning of doing this as a passion project. And then when you do something long enough and you do it well, eventually sponsors come in, and that was when it became more of like a business. But I was not really, I didn't find my purpose in it up until 2019, which was very recent when I broke up with my then boyfriend and felt really lost and had to kind of, I wanted to reinvent myself, but I didn't want to do it without God this time. And so I took a month off, which I know is a privilege, to just dive into different skill sets. And I picked up videography and decided to film myself gardening and doing mundane household things while telling the ancient stories of the Bible through voiceover. So that was how I created this whole branding or around Christianity and wove it into home decor.
Mm-hmm. So if people could see your background right now, they would see kind of the two sides of that. Like you've got this beauty.
Yes.
And then you've got your book Forever Home, which we're going to talk about. But if you look at my background, what do you see?
I see a therapist chair, honestly.
I am a therapist, so.
Great. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it gives
but
off
it's
the
boring.
Vibes.
Like it's, you see nothing. So, you
but
know, kind of
like,
off mic.
It's disarming. It's non-stimulating. That could be really
okay.
Good.
Well, you reframe that very well. I'm more thinking I need Anne to help me. So maybe
can.
We can do that later.
I know you can.
So maybe you can help me later because I've been thinking I really need something for people to look at when I'm on calls all day long.
But, I would love to. Let's
right,
work
cool.
on it.
All right. That's a plan. I love it. Okay. So I'm going to tell you from like the older generation, sometimes we can kind of, I'm going to use your terminology, we can throw some shade on social media influencers.
Yes.
It's like, well, that's not a real job. Like, what is that? So how would you respond to that, to people who don't get it, who don't understand or feel like, yeah, you just kind of woke up one day and fell into something. It's not hard work. You know, how do you respond to that kind of crit?
On one hand, I do empathize because I see where they're coming from when they mention how it's quote unquote not hard work. Because from at least my mother's generation, she lived through war. And so if we're in a competition on who suffered the most here, you know, I'm not going to win. But at the end of the day, I don't believe we should see strife as a competition. And we mm-hmm. should be happy that the next generation is standing atop our shoulders. You know, mm-hmm. the life that I currently have, I owe it all to my parents, despite the shortcomings that they had. So I don't for one second take for granted all of the privileges that I currently have, but I do steward it to the best of my ability. And with all of these resources that we have right now, we would be remiss to not try to influence people to do good when there are so many traumatic influences out there.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's well said. I would love for you to share your parents' story and your story. And you mentioned that your mom went through war, and that was in Vietnam. You're from Vietnam. Can you just give us a little bit of background of your story and how you grew up?
Yes. So I was born in, sorry, pitter-patter is my corgi. I was born in a very impoverished area of Vietnam. I believe that it was like an army base at some point, and was used to grow like rubber trees to produce rubber for the industry. And it was just a place that was not conducive to children growing up because of all the chemical leaks and things like that. So my parents were extremely impoverished. But then when I turned two, my dad got promoted. And so we did away with our little mud hut and built a concrete home. And things were on the up and up when I was cognizant of what was going on. And at 4 years old, we moved to America to stay with my aunt. And that was, I believe, when the real trauma began. I think my parents were really disillusioned by America, and their livelihood was completely tanking. My dad had to take on menial jobs again when in Vietnam he was like a manager. And it was really difficult for them to start over. So as a really young kid, I saw them arguing all the time. And we moved countless times. And it was always a really strange living situation, from someone's converted garage to someone's back house. It's just not a good living situation for anybody, let alone a kid. And so because I grew up in this really high tensioned home environment, I had like a very active nervous system since I was younger. And I didn't know that until I grew up and had relationships of my own, and having those relationships be filled with the same kind of anxieties and strife that I saw in my parents. And not knowing how to undo the cycle that I found myself in until much later in my adulthood. And I'm still mm-hmm. working on it now.
Yeah. And that, Anne, is obviously one of your passions, just using the platform that God has given you to give encouragement and tools to younger people that like your story are dealing with anxiety, depression, trying to make sense of the trauma that they may have experienced, or even just the turmoil in our world. Can you talk just a little bit about your heart and why you don't just do the beautiful space thing and keep it to that, but really have a passion to go deeper?
Yeah, I believe that without believing in a higher power, life could feel really empty really quickly. I mean, all of the answers that the world throws at us to fulfill ourselves with, such as prestige or money or relationships, good things tend to fall short in the long run when we place all of our hopes and dreams in that. So I did not believe in a God growing up, despite my mother's Catholic, you know, background. As soon as I was old enough to tell her, no, I don't want to go to church, I stopped going. And mm-hmm. I was just atheistic or kind of agnostic for a while. But it wasn't until I found myself at the darkest place I'd ever been in that I had this vision of the painting of Jesus in my mind's eye when I was in that really dark place. And it was a painting that my mom had put on our childhood home on the altar. And when I saw that painting, I just felt like this indescribable comfort wash over me. And that was when I was curious about Christianity and asked a Christian friend what it was all about, and later got saved at her home church. But I feel like without having that core attachment to my Creator, it would be so difficult for me to get through this life with a sense of deep-seated purpose, not just purpose for this lifetime, but purpose that exceeds time and space, like eternal purpose. And I feel like we're all wired for that. So now that I do have my faith and it permeates every aspect of my life, it did take a while for me to figure out how to use my platform as a ministry. But if there's a will and there's a vision, you can figure it out, you know, and consult the Lord. Ask him for inspiration, because there's no shortage of that when you consult with him. I think there isn't a vocation alive that you cannot weave the gospel into. And it's not to say you have to quote scripture every video or talk to people about God outright all the time, but you can simply apply the scriptures in the way you treat them. You can literally quote scripture without quoting scripture as well. You could rephrase it and just preach in that authentic way. And I think God will honor it.
And it seems like from the outside looking in, you have a great life. You know, like you have a great career. You have a beautiful home in Los Angeles, a wonderful husband. And a lot of people your age would look at that and say, that's what I want. Like, I want to be an influencer. I want all these thousands of people following me on Instagram or TikTok. Or how would you convince them that that's not enough? That the things that you have that they see from the outside are not what give you the greatest significance of your life or the peace that you need?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that I was not equipped with all of these wonderful assets when I first started out in my career. I didn't have the fancy house or the fancy setup or a good relationship to support me like John. I did have a community though. What I did have though was that peace that I had with my Creator, with the Lord. And from that deep, secure attachment that I had with him, I was able to build stronger relationships around me from my friends and even my family. A lot of those relationships were repaired. And because I had this kind of what they call surrogate attachment figure to the Lord, and I also had a therapist and I had a community, I was really set up for success. And that was what allowed me to fully bloom into the person that I am today with all the resources that are in front of me. So I don't think you should go into this industry with money or prestige or any outward accomplishments as the end goal, because you are going to be sorely disappointed when you find out that the excitement only lasts for 15 minutes. After those 15 minutes of high, you will drift back to the state where if you don't have that inner compass, that inner kind of purpose driving you, you'll be left with a very empty heart. And you can hear this from the vast majority of people who have succeeded, whether they are Christian or not. I feel like we all kind of have this insatiable hole in our psyche, really, that cannot be fulfilled by outward accomplishments. It could only really be fulfilled by relationships that, you know, are God-honoring and are healthy, and your relationship with the Lord himself. And yeah, I'm not speaking from a point where it's like, I made it, trust me, but it's more like, oh, I've seen the cycle over and over again. You know, yeah.
Talk about what life was like when you say you hit rock bottom. Like, can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yes, I hit rock bottom probably twice in my life. And it's just this feeling of hopelessness and helplessness. Whatever situation that happened to somebody that put them in that position really isn't like the main thing, because everyone has different struggles. I think everyone has different tolerance levels of strife, and that's completely fine. But what put me in my darkest place when I was 16, I believe, was the absolute destruction of my first relationship. At that time, when I met the then love of my life, I was 14, 2 years after my dad had passed, and my relationship with my single mother turned really sour. And I felt like I had no one to turn to. And then I met this kid who was 16, who like love bombed me and just showed me such lavish displays of affection, went out of his way to show me that he cared and was there for me and completely like won me over. I would have done anything for this guy. He was, in a sense, like my God. It was idolatry at its finest because I had no God. And so I poured my entire heart into this relationship thinking that this is it, even at like 14.
Mm-hmm.
But it was true to me. And before I knew it, his attitude toward me took a downturn. He also had a lot of familial strife, and we were both misguided children, but he got really abusive, emotionally and physically. And once he hit me, I fell into this deep depression that I just could not get myself out of. And I just felt like everything I knew about relationships was wrong, and my entire world turned upside down. So after that ended, I thrusted myself into all the parties I could find, numbing myself with all the substances that I could find at 16, and eventually found myself in the back of a stranger's car, all messed up, you know, drunk and on all sorts of things. And that was when I had that divine experience, seeing the image of Jesus right in the back of that car. I did not have any interest in religion at the time. Didn't care a lick about God or anything like that. But truly, when I was at my darkest, when I was still a sinner, Christ died for me, right? So he truly found me when I was at my darkest and saved me. But life wasn't, you know, smooth sailing from there. I still had all of this trauma that I have yet to unload. And so my second undoing was after college. When I moved back into my mother's house, I went to UC Berkeley and thought that she would be so proud of me for, you know, succeeding. And she was when I was distanced from her. But when I moved back into her own roof, under her roof, it was just as toxic as ever. We didn't know how to have a healthy relationship together. I realized there was no boundaries between both of us. And there was constant humiliation, hypercriticism, physical abuse, all of those things. But I knew that she loved me. She just didn't know how to self-regulate. And I didn't either. So that thrusted me into an even deeper depression, I would say, because this time I did have God. But for some reason, he didn't rescue me from it like he did the first time. And I almost gave up on my faith in 2015, 2016, just because I didn't have the right community around me. They didn't know what to do with all of the anxiety that I had. And I ruined a lot of my friendships and relationships at that time because home life was so chaotic. But I believe that it had to happen. The season of wilderness was very necessary for me to have a more authentic relationship with God and a more realistic expectation for this life that we have. And from that, he also exposed so many wounds I didn't even know were there. And it was so important to expose those wounds so that they could get healed and not just, you know, covered over with a Band-Aid.
Hey, as you're listening, do you have any questions about some of the topics and conversations we've had recently on Java with Julie? Well, if so, Second Cup, our monthly member-only Zoom discussion, is coming up soon on April 9th. I'm going to start by sharing some thoughts about what things help propel people in their healing journey and also some common obstacles that people can face when addressing issues from the past. And as always, I will get to your questions. You can ask your questions about any recent Java episodes. And this will be a meaningful conversation whether you're in the thick of healing or you really want to walk with somebody else who is. As I mentioned before, Second Cup is a member-only benefit. So if you're an Authentic Intimacy member, you can sign up at the link in the show notes. And if you're not a member and you'd like to find out more about membership, there's a link for that in the show notes as well. Okay, let's get back to my conversation with Anne. Boy, Anne, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think it's so powerful that your second rock bottom was after you had already become a Christian. Because I think when we hear testimonies, we expected the first one. Like, right. Well, you didn't have God and he brought you to your knees and he met you in the midst of that. But I think that sometimes we feel like once you have God, it's all like from strength to strength from there. And, you know, people even say like, Jesus covers my past and I don't have to go back there. Like he just healed me. And when that happens, like when you hit a second rock bottom, as you said, it can really make you question the power of God and, can make you doubt your faith. So what was it that helped you during that time to acknowledge that you still had wounds, that things weren't always easy or joyful, but that God was still with you?
I think the main turning point for me was when one of my close friends forced me to go to therapy. Literally drove me to see his therapist, not his therapist, but his counseling center. And he found me a therapist and said, you need to do something about this anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I was so nervous because I had this stigmatization against therapy as like a weakness, or that you had to be really messed up to get, you know, your brain checked. I was so prejudiced against mental health care. But the first time I spoke to a therapist, I knew something was different. They knew what to do with me while everyone else didn't. They were asking questions that were difficult to answer, but I needed to be honest with. They were Christian counselors, so they prayed for me during the sessions and helped me to restore my trust in Jesus. I remember one of the most important sessions that I had was when she had me close my eyes and envision Jesus in the room. And I felt so uncomfortable doing that because I felt unsafe in his presence at that point. All of the authority figures in my life had seemingly betrayed me by being very abrasive and mean or just abusive in other ways. And so I thought that if my authority figures were bad, certainly the ultimate authority figure must be worse, right? Because some of these people represented God. So what kind of person was he? That was my mindset. So I did not want him in the room. I said, he's over there close to the exit. And she said, okay. And she left it at that. And then that stuck with me up until a year later when we were almost done with therapy. She had me do that same exercise again. And at that point, I had already learned what self-validation meant. I learned what boundaries meant. I had already applied some of these in my life by moving out of my mom's house and finding a different church and things like that. And so when I closed my eyes for this second time and envisioned Jesus, I really wanted him next to me. I felt like he was sitting there on the couch with me, and he had this peaceful look on his face. And I just knew at that point, that I had to go through all of that because my idea of God was not who he was. And he was so eager to show me his true self. And he was eager to show me that he is not the people who represent him. He is so much more. He's a perfect father. And I didn't even know what that was. So despite all of the trauma that I endured, I do believe it was necessary for me. And in the end, I gained something so much more valuable than just healing. I gained a more authentic relationship with him.
Boy, that's beautiful and so well stated. That's a journey we all need to go on. And if you look back on like the last decade of your life and some of that journey of healing, how did those wounds of growing up with an abusive parent, having an abusive relationship, just all the wounds and trauma that you experience, how does that set us up for more bad relationships and even set us up for falling into different kinds of sin?
Yeah, I mean, when we suffer by the sins of others, it's almost natural for us to replicate that sin later on in our later relationships. And that's kind of what we call a generational cycle of trauma, right? Unless it's addressed and worked on, it will get passed on because sin is pervasive. It's like a cancer. And when I experienced my first idea of love modeled by my parents, I thought that love had to be intense. I thought that unless it was all-encompassing, all in, all the time, then it wasn't love because they were so passionate about everything. And the intensity in our household was always at an all-time high. So I couldn't attach myself to stability, like stable people when I was of dating age. I had to find someone who excited me, who made me feel like this is all or nothing because that's all I ever knew. And it was a very like, it was like being an adrenaline junkie almost, being attaching yourself to people who you know are volatile. But so many of my friends and the people that I know do that because they see, and I saw this quote recently, they see stability as boredom and chaos as comfort. And that is what our brain does to, believe it or not, protect us. It attaches itself to what's familiar because even if the familiar is abusive, it's still less scary than the stability that we don't know. That is unpredictable to us, you know? And it wasn't until I learned what healthy and normal looked like, until I had that standard of health to aspire to, I was always ruining my own relationships due to being just as volatile as I saw my parents and just as anxious and distrusting and unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. And when did your husband, John, enter the picture? Kind of how did he fit into all that?
He's always been such a good boy. Like he grew up in a Christian home and, you know, never did anything too bad his whole life. And, you know, that kind of like sheltered upbringing while I was, you know, going up and down.
The wild
my
child.
Entire life. Exactly, the wild child. And then we met when I was in this kind of experimental era of my life. This was right after my therapy process had been done and I had just moved out of my mom's house and established myself as an individual, like this young adult with her job and, you know, that kind of thing. I had also moved out of my home church and was churchless during that time. And I thought, well, you know, I should give like dating apps a try because I never tried this before. So I downloaded it. And I saw his profile on the first day that I downloaded it and I talked to him and we went on a date and that's it. And then, you know, now we're married and typically doesn't happen like this, but I got lucky, but we were both not super super Christian when we met each other. We were Christian in theology, but we were not Christian in our lifestyle choices. That's because I was distrustful of the church still. Mm-hmm. And it was hard for me to go back to adhering to all the rules and regulations that traumatized me. And so I was like, oh, we should move in. I was wild. And him also being, you know, Christian in concept, but not in heart, was like, oh, that sounds fun. And so we did. And it was a stupid decision. Did not work out at all. We ended up breaking up and stayed broken up for 6 months. Because during that time together, I realized we're not heading in a fulfilling direction. Like, we could get married and all that, but I don't think that any of this glorifies God. And so it had to come to an end, and we had to find our own faith apart from each other again and do what was right by our morals and by the biblical morals, I mean, apart from each other. And that was what I did. And I never intended to get back together. But during those 6 months, he sought counseling and he sought discipleship from our pastor, like consistently without my knowing. And he just grew to love God so much on his own. And he felt like if we gave this a second try, he would do what was necessary to be a co-leader in leading me to Christ. And so I thought, well, you know, he did do all of these things and my pastor kind of like verified it. So let's give it a try. And sure enough, he really did not do it to get me back. And I truly appreciated what the Lord had done in his life. And so we got married.
Wow. Yeah. And I saw some of your wedding videos. You got married, it looked like during COVID, but just beautiful.
Peak beautiful COVID. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
So, Anne, what you described is really, really common for a lot of people who grew up in religious settings. They feel wounded by the quote unquote rules, particularly around relationships and sexuality. And then they want nothing to do with that, even though they are Christian. They've had a saving experience with Christ as you had. Mm. How did you get to the place where you actually started to see the biblical teaching on sexuality, marriage, relationships as something good when that same thing maybe had been traumatic for you in the past?
Yeah, I think it was when I found myself at a really empty place. After pursuing all the things that I thought would free me. So instead of liberating me, it made me feel enslaved and made me feel trapped to my own desires. And I wanted something more out of my romantic relationship. I wanted more than just personal fulfillment. And if that's what you want, then you can do whatever, you know, like there really no one's going to force you not to once you have the freedom to do it. But I found that if you have a true relationship with God, you're going to want to do what pleases him. And because I had already healed my relationship with the Lord, I felt this constant like nudging in my soul. It wasn't guilt and it truly wasn't shame. It was just a nudging that this is not what I intended for you. And you know it. This is not what's going to give you an effective ministry. It's not going to make you any closer to him because you're both feeling the stirring in your soul. And it was like, I felt like my heavenly father was like gently nagging me to go back to him, you know, to do what I know to be true. And I think this is so difficult to explain on a practical level because this is a relationship with someone you can't see and feel, but it is felt. And I felt that nudging constantly whenever I wanted to be experimental and live a life that, you know, was free of the burdens of church roles or whatever. But God's like, you know, they might not have presented it in the right way, but the message is my word. And once I was able to separate like the presentation with the message, just like how I separated God with my authority figures, it really allowed me to embrace it with openness and with a softness that I didn't have before.
Wow. Boy, that is so well said. Thank you,
thank you for
describing that. That's a key journey. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I'd love to hit on, your relationship with your mom. And I'm guessing that she has given you permission to share about the things that you've shared. I know you have written and talked about how you have reconciled with her. There are a lot of young adults who are on that journey of acknowledging true things that happened to them that wounded them, you know, just things about their parents that are imperfect or things they grew up with that were traumatic. Mm. And how did you go from the place of maybe denying that to like realizing that was true and being angry and needing to set boundaries to restoring that relationship? And the things that you've said, even really having empathy and appreciation for your mom.
Yeah, I think forgiveness is such a delicate topic because no one can make you truly forgive unless you feel this satisfying release in your soul. We're wired to be logical beings, and it is very difficult for us to feign forgiveness when in the back of our minds, we still feel like there's debt to be paid. You know, like you owe me an apology or you owe me a better life or something like that. But what I learned about forgiveness is that in Christ, we really do have a satisfying reason to forgive. I love my study Bible because the commentary is so good. I flipped to Psalm 1 when I was going through kind of like this betrayal with my friend, and it totally opened up my eyes to what forgiveness really means. And God is a just God. That is the God that we serve. He doesn't sweep sin under the cosmic carpet. He addresses it head on and makes a way to forgive us while still punishing the sin. And what he did was he put it on himself. He took our mother's and our father's sins, our sins, on himself and punished himself for it so that sin doesn't go unpunished. But at the same time, we could be saved and then we can be free to forgive others, knowing that the debt has been paid. It's not covered up with a Band-Aid. It truly has been paid. And so when I realized that, it allowed me to fully forgive everyone in my life who had done me wrong, because I felt like God had, or Jesus had died for them too, regardless of whether or not they have accepted him. He volunteered to die for them. And if I truly believe that, then I shouldn't feel like anyone owes me anything anymore. He already paid it all for them. So it gave me this satisfying, logical relief. And after I had that aha moment, now it was time to figure out how to repair. Because I think that the Bible is very clear on repairing important relationships when you can and when it's appropriate to do so. And I felt like my relationship with my mom, especially, though it was really bad, turbulent, abusive, all of these things, there was room for reparation. There was room for reconciliation because there was love underneath. So I started thinking about all the things that could have traumatized her that she told me about. And in those stories, I tried to take what I understood. I tried to find stories of my own that I could relate to. I did all of this self-work prior to talking to her, by the way. And once I got a clearer picture of why she is the way she is. I wrote her a letter empathizing with as many, you know, stories as I could with her. I also told her that I'm willing to help her out with her bills so that she doesn't have to always be in survival mode, because I feel like that was one of the key things that tore her up growing up. It's just this feeling of, I have to make it. I have a daughter. I am on my own. Like, that drove her crazy. And so I said, I'm going to help you because I have the resources to now, and I'm willing to. And I feel like that kind of like that olive branch that I extended to her just totally softened her heart. It made her feel safer with me, and it differentiated our relationship from her other tumultuous relationships. And since that letter and conversation, she has been so willing to do her part to make the relationship safe for me. And it's not saying that we're totally perfect now. Now we know what it takes to be with each other. And it's a lot of like distance and then short conversations rather than long exposed, you know, time together.
Yeah.
but we have gained so much from repairing our relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm. And that's wise that you're like, hey, it's still not perfect. And even when you repair relationships, you still need to use wisdom and discretion just in how do we navigate. So that's a great real life example.
Thank you.
Well, Anne, you just are so articulate in just sharing what God has done and is doing in your life. And that really provides encouragement for people who are on some of that same journey of, you know, maybe hitting rock bottom and maybe wondering if there's goodness in what they grew up with in terms of learning about God and dealing with some of the wounds that they've walked through. So thank you for being an open book about those things, because it really will be an encouragement to those who hear this.
It's my honor, truly. God is really adhering to his promise by using every brokenness that I've experienced to help someone else. So it gives me purpose as well. Yeah.
Well, I was really inspired by hearing Anne's testimony. There's just so much that she's already walked through at such a young age, but she has a determination to find God in her story and to cling to him. You know, overcoming generational patterns of behavior like abuse and pain, boy, that's tough. But I think we can learn from Anne's story that God is in the healing process, that he loves to take our brokenness and redeem it. Anne's book is called Forevermore, Moving Beyond Brokenness to Build a Strong and Beautiful Life, and it's out now. You can purchase it through the link in our show notes. And we've also included links to Anne's Instagram and her website. If you want to explore some more resources on healing from trauma and abuse, take a look at two of the blogs we linked to in our show notes. Hey, before you go, I want to remind you that Google Podcast is closing at the end of this month. And this is, I think, the last episode that you're going to be able to listen to on the Google Podcast app. So if that's how you usually listen, don't worry, our episodes are still available lots of other places, including YouTube, Spotify, and the Apple Podcast app. Well, friend, that's all I have for now. And next week, I'm excited to share a conversation I had with Ted Cunningham, who's going to be talking about how important it is to learn to laugh and have fun. And boy, that's a conversation that I need. Sometimes we need to be serious, and sometimes we just need to remember the beauty of laughter. So that's where we're headed next week, and I'll see you then.